Welcome to the fourth session of today's conference. As it is a private international law session, the last part is always looking at recognition and enforcement. And that's what we're doing now. And I'm very pleased to introduce two speakers. Well, one of them I don't really have to introduce anymore because you have seen him during the day and all of us know him very well, Andrea Bonomi. But before, we'll hear Christoph Kern, who is teaching at the University of Heidelberg and who has been at the University of Lausanne before, and he's here occasionally. For further details, I'd rather refer to the documentations because I think we're all more interested in what they have to say than what they have done in their lives until now. So, Christoph, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Thank you also for having me. And as you said, recognition and enforcement is always in the end of a private international law conference. We will try to do our best to attract your attention to this issue, which in my eyes is a very interesting issue, but it is not in everybody. So we will try to do our very best. Next disclaimer, I didn't bring PowerPoint slides. In my last conference here in the Swiss Institute of Comparative Law, I had PowerPoint slides. The American colleagues didn't have PowerPoint slides, so I thought this time I'm the modern part and I have no PowerPoint slides, but I see I am not. Nevertheless, I hope that you can follow my presentation just as I prepared it, and I will try to have a look at the 1602, from 1602 to 21. I'll try to keep to the schedule, and that's why I will start right now. So our conference focuses, as we see it here, on U.S. litigation, with the subtitle asking whether U.S. litigation is still a threat for European businesses. Why then do I want to focus on the recognition of foreign judgments in the U.S.? Isn't this the wrong perspective? Shouldn't I focus on the recognition of American judgments in Europe? And why should, going to the case which I will be talking about, why should European businesses care about a class action against a U.S. company for an oil-related disaster in Ecuador in times when environmental protection has it rough in the United States? Well, it is indeed true that European businesses have traditionally cared most about the recognition and enforcement of U.S. judgments in Europe, and Andrea Bonomi will talk about this in a moment. However, today's world is different from the world some 30 years ago. Up to the 1980s and 1990s, only few European businesses had considerable property in the United States. For all those who didn't, avoiding the recognition and enforcement of a U.S. judgment in Europe was an efficient way to escape from the outcomes of U.S. litigation. This situation has changed considerably during the last years. Not only did large European companies like car or aircraft manufacturers start to produce in the United States, dragging with them their component suppliers, but also small and medium-sized businesses built plants and created branches or subsidiaries in the U.S., seeking to conquer at least a share in the large U.S. market. Even retail sellers like the German chains Aldi and most recently Lidl have expanded to the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. Most probably, this development will even intensify as a consequence of the pressure the current U.S. president puts on businesses to create jobs in the United States. This brings us closer to the explanation of why recognition of foreign judgments in the U.S. can be of interest for European businesses. Actually, there are three strands. First, a European business may wish to enforce within the U.S. a judgment won in a court outside the U.S., in particular, a European court. This can be a judgment against the U.S. debtor, but also a judgment against the non-U.S. debtor having assets in the United States. Even
If the European business could sue in the United States, it might prefer another forum for various reasons, one of them being due to the American rule of costs, according to which every party has to bear its own costs regardless of the outcome of the case. We talked about that several times today. In this first situation, in which the European business wants to use the foreign judgment as a basis for enforcing a claim, the European business is interested in having the foreign judgment recognized and enforced in the United States. Second, a European business may wish to rely on a judgment given outside the United States, in particular a European court, to avoid another lawsuit in the United States. Indeed, US courts have permitted parties to rely on foreign judgments as a bar against re-litigation in the United States under certain circumstances. Invoking the preclusive effect of a foreign judgment is, of course, attractive for a European business if the foreign judgment dismissed the complaint. But it may also be attractive if the foreign judgment finds in favor of the plaintiff, that is, against the European business. And this despite the fact that in such a case, US courts require that the party has satisfied the judgment against her. On the one hand, the amount, for example, the damages awarded to the plaintiff may be lower than what the defendant had to expect in a US court. On the other hand, the costs of proceedings in the United States, together with the American rule of costs, may be so high that the business wishes to comply with the foreign judgment even if it believes the judgment to be wrong and would not be exposed to enforcement in the forum state or other states. In this second situation, in which the European business wants to use the foreign judgment as a bar against relitigation in the United States, the European business is also interested in having the foreign judgment recognized and enforced, or just recognized in this situation. And in the third situation, the goal of the European business is the opposite. Imagine a foreign judgment holding a European business liable with the judgment creditor seeking to enforce the judgment in the United States. Enforcement in the US is a risk for all European businesses that have important assets there, in particular, and I repeat myself, plants, branches, or subsidiaries. In this case, the European business is interested in not having the foreign judgment recognized in the United States. This is even more so if the European business believes that recognition and enforcement would also be excluded in its European home state. To sum up, the recognition of foreign judgments in the United States is clearly of interest for European businesses, and depending on the situation, proceedings in the US courts are considered either as a threat or as a privilege. This being said, let us now have a look at the fundamentals of the recognition of foreign judgments in the US and then discuss the recent decision in the Chevron versus Donziger case. In the US, and we heard about it from Simeon Simeonidis this morning already, in the US there is no nationwide law on the recognition of foreign judgments. At first glance, this may come as a surprise for Europeans. However, the situation in Europe is not that different if we focus on Europe and not on the individual European countries. In Europe, most judgments from another EU member state or a contracting state of the Lugano Convention will be recognized in all other EU member states or contracting states under the almost identical and relatively low requirements of the Brussels I recast or the Lugano Convention. This parallels the situation in the United States, where judgments given by a court in another US state, so-called sister state or domestic interstate judgments, are entitled to full faith and credit under the US Constitution. Of course, Europeans would not call judgments from another European court domestic interstate judgments. And they have not yet gone so far as to recognize and enforce all kinds of judgment handed down in another European state without any control. However, it is important to stress that full faith and credit in the US does not exclude any control by the state in which recognition or enforcement are sought. Courts have allowed a number of exceptions, most notably the lack of personal or subject matter jurisdiction of the court, the lack of adequate notice to the defendant, an infringement of one of the parties' right to be heard, and fraud. These exceptions are quite similar to, and with respect to jurisdiction, even more important than what may be a ground for non-recognition within Europe. Even the public policy exception, which is not possible in the United States, is in constant retreat in European law. Moreover, similar to the United States Supreme Court that has jurisdiction to interpret the full faith and credit clause, uniformity is guaranteed in Europe by the European Court of Justice, which is not only competent to interpret the Brussels recast regulation, but whose judgments also influence the interpretation of the Lugano Convention. Even more striking is the similarity with respect to truly foreign judgment, that is, judgments which have not been handed down by a court in the US or in Europe, respectively. In Europe, the Brussels I recast and the Lugano Convention do not govern the recognition of judgments which do not come from another EU member state or contracting state. Consequently, each court applies the national law of the forum. Normally, there is no possibility to bring the case before the European Court of Justice. In the United States, the recognition of such judgments was for a long time governed by federal common law. However, in the aftermath of Erie Railroad Company versus Tompkins, foreign judgment recognition migrated to the domain of state law. As a consequence, there are no completely uniform standards, and even if a case is to be decided in a federal court, the federal court must apply the respective state law. What then are the standards applied by US courts? The leading case still is Hilton versus Guillot, decided in 1895 by the Supreme Court. In this case, the Supreme Court held that the recognition of a foreign judgment is a matter of international comity, defined as, and I quote, neither a matter of absolute obligation on the one hand, nor of mere courtesy and goodwill upon the other, end of quote. The Supreme Court then listed a number of aspects to be considered, like the opportunity for a full and fair trial, the citation or voluntarily appearance, the impartial administration of justice, the absence of fraud, and finally, a reciprocity requirement. The European lawyer is familiar with all these aspects. Most of them are, in one way or another, part of the national laws governing the recognition of foreign judgments, although not in the form of principles, but rather in the form of clear rules. In the US, the Hilton versus Guillot standards became part of the so-called federal common law, and with the repudiation of federal common law in Erie, the majority of states continued to follow the common law approach, with the exception of the reciprocity requirement, which had been heavily criticized and dropped by the courts in most states. In 1962, the Uniform Law Commission codified the most prevalent common law rules in the Uniform Foreign Money Judgments Recognition Act. Pursuant to Section 4A of the 1962 Act, a foreign money judgment must not be recognized in three cases: if the tribunals and procedures in the foreign country are unfair, if the court lacked personal jurisdiction over the defendant, or if it lacked subject matter jurisdiction. Section 4B of the 1962 Act describes six other cases in which the court is permitted but not required to deny recognition of the foreign judgment: lack of notice, fraud, a contradiction to public policy, the existence of an inconsistent judgment, the violation of a forum selection clause, or a seriously inconvenient forum. During the next decades, a majority of 32 states adopted statutes based on the 1962 Act, and only few states added a reciprocity requirement. In 2005, the Uniform Law Commission published a revised version of the 1962 Act, now called Uniform Foreign Country Money Judgments Recognition Act. The 2005 Act, which has been enacted by some 20 states and is to be introduced in some more states soon, follows the same approach. Its new Section 4A places an affirmative duty on the forum court to recognize a foreign country money judgment unless one of the grounds for non-recognition stated in subsections B or C applies. Subsection A of the 1962 Act became subsection B of the 2005 Act. Thus, the three mandatory grounds for denying recognition, unfair courts or procedures, lack of personal jurisdiction over the defendant, lack of subject matter jurisdiction, have remained the same. The non-mandatory grounds for denying recognition moved from subsection B in the 1962 Act to subsection C in the 2005 Act have been expanded from 6 to 8, with the two new grounds for non-recognition focusing on the specific proceeding. The court may also deny the recognition if the circumstances in which the judgment was rendered raise substantial doubt about the integrity of the rendering court with respect to the judgment, or if the specific proceeding was not compatible with the requirement of due process of law. Apart from these two new grounds for non-recognition, another amendment is of particular interest in the context of this presentation. The 2005 Act explicitly limits the definition of fraud to so-called extrinsic fraud, that is, fraudulent conduct of the prevailing party depriving the losing party of an adequate opportunity to present its case. It follows that recognition may not be denied in cases of intrinsic fraud. Examples of intrinsic fraud are false witness testimony or the admission of a forged document into evidence. The assertion of intrinsic fraud thus must and can only be raised in the foreign court. The exclusion of intrinsic fraud is nothing completely new, though. In interpreting the 1962 Act, which only named fraud, courts had already excluded non-recognition for intrinsic fraud. In states which have not enacted statutes for money judgments, courts rely on sections 481, 482 of the Restatement Third of the Foreign Relations Law of the United States of 1987. I'm not sure whether the current Restatement, the Fourth, already has provisions on this, but you're the expert and you can add this. These two sections, and probably also their predecessors, are another codification of the common law of recognition as described by Hilton versus Guillot, but without a reciprocity requirement. Section 98 of the Restatement Second, Conflict of Laws, according to which a valid judgment rendered in a foreign nation after a fair trial in a contested proceeding will be recognized in the United States, is generally considered to be inadequate, as Simeon Simeonides wrote in 2000. All in all, European businesses could so far expect that foreign judgments would be recognized and enforced in the United States under state common law standards similar, although not identical, to what they know from Europe. Let us now have a look whether this may have changed due to the Second Circuit's 2016 decision in Chevron versus Donziger. In this case, plaintiff Chevron sought to avoid recognition of a multi-billion US dollar judgment rendered against it in a class action in Ecuador, a class action filed by Ecuadorian nationals for pollution of their habitat in the rainforest by Texaco, which Chevron had later acquired. The Ecuadorian plaintiffs were represented by a New York litigator and environmental activist, Stephen Donziger, who had first tried to litigate the case in the United States, but after dismissal on forum nonconvenience grounds, had brought the class actions in Ecuador. Chevron claimed it had been the victim of various forms of fraud in the Ecuadorian proceedings, ranging from false evidence to the bribery of the trial judge. For this reason, it asked for preemptive equitable relief and, in particular, an injunction against Donziger and his clients, forbidding them to enforce the Ecuadorian judgment. Ultimately, after a number of decisions, we talked about it yesterday, ultimately the injunction was granted insofar as enforcement in the United States was concerned. What is interesting for us is that the judge in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York, Louis Kaplan, did not base his decision on the traditional rules on the recognition and enforcement of foreign judgments. Instead, he applied a federal statute which does not directly relate to the recognition and enforcement of judgment, and we already talked about this statute as well, the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, the RICO Act. In the district judge's opinion, which was confirmed by the Second Circuit, the fraudulent acts of Donziger and his trial team in the proceedings rendered this act applicable and allowed for an injunction against Donziger. From the recognition and enforcement perspective, this is extremely interesting. First, the RICO proceedings, although no direct enforcement action, de facto resulted in barring the Ecuadorian judgment from being recognized and enforced in the United States. Second, the RICO Act, a federal statute designed to fight organized crime, was for the first time applied in the area of denying recognition and enforcement, an area which since Erie had been the exclusive domain of state law and mostly state courts. Third, the RICO Act allowed the court to deny recognition and enforcement for intrinsic fraud. This somehow contradicts the development of the common law and the 2005 Act, according to which intrinsic fraud is no ground for non-recognition. One must wonder whether in the future any extant federal statute can be used to avoid recognition and enforcement of a foreign judgment, even in cases which, under traditional common law and the uniform laws, there was no ground for non-recognition. If the answer is to the affirmative, Reverend V. Donziger allows for new obstacles to the recognition of foreign judgments in the United States. But is this really something completely new, and should European businesses bother about it? Today, this is quite difficult to say. On the one hand, from an internal US perspective, the case raises interesting questions about federalism. Moreover, accepting intrinsic fraud as determined by the court in Chevron v. Donziger as a new ground for non-recognition would make US law less recognition-friendly than it used to be. This effect would be even more important if, in addition to the RICO Act, other federal statutes which do not directly address the question of recognition and enforcement of foreign judgments would in the future be used by the courts to issue injunctions which de facto bar recognition and enforcement. Together with the other developments, in particular the Restatement 4th of Foreign Relations Law, which discourages state courts from recognizing foreign country money judgments in the absence of debtors' assets in the state, this could be a turning point in the law of recognition and enforcement of foreign judgments in the US, a law which so far has been very generous and shown much respect for and deference to foreign courts. As the Supreme Court just recently denied certiorari to Donziger and his clients, we have to wait for a definite answer. On the other hand, at least the Second Circuit's decision in the Chevron v. Donziger case should not be too surprising for Europeans. Actually, European courts would, given the facts determined by the district court, most probably have denied recognition and enforcement for violation of procedural public policy. The restriction of fraud to cases of extrinsic fraud finds no similarly stringent parallel in European law. That the US court had used the RICO Act to deny recognition and enforcement in a case of intrinsic fraud may therefore also be a sign of convergence. Convergence, in turn, is most needed in our difficult times. So let me conclude. What happens in the US with respect to recognition and enforcement of foreign judgments is not only significant for scholars interested in comparative civil procedure, it is also worthwhile knowing for European businesses. The Chevron v. Donziger case deserves to be read and followed not only because of its story, an environmental disaster which as such is not fake news, but which gave rise to proceedings in which almost anything one could imagine has been alleged, but also for its potential significance for international civil litigation. Let others watch the House of Cards to be prepared for reality. Lawyers can read their cases and have distraction and education at the same time. Thank you for your attention.